have on our agenda today public hearing and possible work session on House Bills 2659, 2660, 2661, and 2662. Hasn't been referred to us yet. And Maury is not here. Mm-hmm. Is he still down there trying to keep the asterisks off the hole? Oh, well, let's see. What are we going to... Okay, who else do we have? Ed, do you want to take the mic in lieu of the fact that Maury's not here? Excuse me, Andy? Andy, do you know if Maury Astley was still down there trying to keep the asterisks off the phone book? Or?
I didn't know that.
Mr. Chairman, I spoke with the commissioner, and my testimony reflects his opinion also. Basically, I'm in favor of a deregulation bill for small telephone companies. However, these specific bills don't entirely deregulate the companies. They take them out of the law for specific provisions. It's my belief that deregulation should be complete. deregulated companies should compete, be free to compete, and not be free from competition. And deregulation cuts both ways. Deregulated companies are free to make a lot of money, and they're also free to fail. These bills strip the Public Utility Commissioner and soon to be commission from the ability to protect the public and protect the small companies from competition. If the legislature were to deregulate, it would be our preference to do so completely. One other concern I have is with the escape valve in the legislation. It's my belief that the Iowa escape valve that's used in a similar deregulation context was 500 customer signatures on a petition or 5%, whichever was lower, of the customers of the telephone companies would be sufficient to bring the company back on under regulation. And then the commission can grant a petition for deregulation again of that company if it so decides in the public interest. The Iowa bill has worked very well, I'm told. I talked to commission members there, and they told me that no company had been brought back under regulation.
How long has the Iowa bill been in effect?
I believe it's 2 years.
We're operating at a little bit of disadvantage since we haven't had Maury here to go to take us through the bills. But can you elaborate a little bit on the these bills in relation to your contention that
in section 2 of each one of the bills, Mr. Chairman, it takes out of regulation certain sections of Oregon legislation. Some of that being under rate regulation, some of that being affiliated interest, and some of that being financing orders. It's my understanding that they still intend to submit tariffs to us and still have territorial allocation to them.
Is it you're recommending then that if they are deregulated, then that there not be any territorial allocation?
Yes, sir.
We wish more. Probably definitely not what Maury had in mind. is that a general philosophical? Is this from a philosophical point of view?
That's from a philosophical point of view, Representative Ekus. That if they're going to be deregulated, that there needs to be the things that give them freedom from entry of competitors need to be brought out also.
Let me ask how this compares. You have other areas outside of the telecommunications industry where you have small companies that are not regulated. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Realizing that it's not...
St. Paul Telephone is a cooperative that's not been regulated by the commission at any time, and it does not have a territorial allocation. The common law protects a utility pretty much anyway.
How would you envision common law applying in this case?
If a utility serves a individual under the common law, then they have the right to that individual location and or person as a customer, and some other utility can't come in and steal that customer, in a sense. They are protected from that kind of a policy. On the other hand, if a customer wants to build a microwave system, a private system of their own, we provided in HR 2200 the ability for them to do that anyway. So I don't think the thing that's critical is the territorial allocation laws. It's the question of whether they would be free from antitrust legislation. And there is a test the federal courts have used that require active regulation by a commission. And I think that this would get very cloudy if this wasn't made very clear. And I don't think that the commission, if all these bills were passed, the commission would be giving them active regulation.
You may have to run that by me again. I'm not sure I understand.
The federal antitrust laws require that for a utility to be out from under those laws, it has to be actively regulated by a state regulator or federal regulator.
Oh.
Okay. Whether deletion of rate regulation and some of the other things that they've asked for, I think would be a very cloudy legal issue as to whether they would come under the antitrust laws or not.
It must be this 3:30 to 5 o'clock time or something, but Maury's not here. We're losing our Representative Anderson.
I guess I think I got that last one okay, and I assume that municipal utilities are not subject to antitrust. But let's go back to the territorial thing for a minute. I'm not really clear on this. A little telephone company with 300 subscribers with headquarters in Burns, Oregon, let's say. And they've got lines running down to fields and every other place around the place. And if they were deregulated under these bills, then that territory is up for grabs. Is that up for grabs? With the larger telephone companies who want to string parallel lines, or just how does that work?
Representative Ekus, Representative Anderson, it's my opinion that the common law protects them from that pretty much, and that many of the co-ops we have in the state of Oregon, electric co-ops, do not have any allocated territory. But as I said, it isn't the allocation of territory that's bothering us as much as whether this is active regulation or not, and whether they come under the federal antitrust laws, which gets to be a very difficult thing, particularly when you're talking about the problems of the sharing of all this toll income and the means that they have between telephone companies that might be a per se violation of the Federal Antitrust Act, and that becomes very cloudy.
I get a grasp of that, but I guess I'm not sure. We've got territorial allocations we talk about, and I'm not sure I have a clear meaning of territories that are allocated, what that purpose is.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I share your concern. I'm not certain how the common law and the territory allocation law are different, and I've asked the question, and Assistant Attorney General, who has answered it, has always said they really aren't all that much different.
I guess what I'm hearing is, and maybe we can hear from somebody else who had a different view, that territorial allocations, because of common law, are meaningless. Did I put words in your mouth?
Representative Ekus, Representative Anderson, yes, there is a great emotional attachment to territorial allocation by many of the smaller companies. My concern mainly is with the aspect, the antitrust aspects, and the fact that we would be holding tariffs for telephone companies over which we would have no rights to change the rates or look at the rate of returns of those companies. That if we're going to deregulate, I would propose to deregulate as fully as possible to allow those companies to compete as much as possible in the marketplace similar to other companies.
Mr. Chairman, I think that issue might be one that we might want to investigate further, whether it's the PUC or us or whatever, we get a better opinion. That's the crux of these bills.
Any other questions? Yet, I think I'll call Maury up, and then I may ask you to come back.
Sure, I'll stay here.
Afterward.
Thank you.
Maury Astley?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I apologize for my lateness. It's over in another committee protecting our asterisks. And unfortunately wasn't enough prepared on all these attachments that I brought today.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad to hear you like asterisks enough to protect them.
you may be relieved to know that I'm not going to read that entire document. Probably much more lengthy than it needs to be.
You might like relieved to know we might not either.
You will take us through the
yes.
bills, though, and the content.
As much as you wish, yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Maury Astley. I'm the Executive Vice President of the Oregon Independent Telephone Association. With me today is John Dillard. He's the owner and manager of the Monroe Telephone Company. John's going to talk a little bit after I do about some of his own experience and affiliated interests as of one particular area. I have some other things that I'll go through, other companies' experience in that area as well as others. Over the last 10 years have been tremendous changes in our industry, much of it under the name of deregulation and in the name of furthering competition. However, for small companies, deregulation, including House Bill 2200, has actually caused more work for regulated services. There are more requests for information, more involvement in dividing the revenues, determining new subsidies, and dealing with all the new complexities of our industry. Attached to my testimony are several exhibits. First is a list of companies by size and rates. This I will discuss as we talk about which companies are affected by House Bill 2659, 2660, 2661, and 2662. Second item is a chart of legal expenses for OIT over the last several years. These rising costs are caused by legislative and regulatory activities. Our member companies are facing similar increases in legal and consulting fees. In a moment, I will give some examples of this. Third is a section-by-section analysis of the bills as requested by Representative Berea. It describes who is affected, how they are affected, and what the existing statutes are intended to regulate. Also attached is a letter from Cascade Utilities, who could not be here today. I should mention, Representative Berea, that it didn't lend itself to the section-by-section analysis as we talked about, because what we're doing is exempting ourselves from statutes. So I thought merely an explanation of what those statutes are, and then you would understand what we're trying to deregulate.
I appreciate that.
First, some general comments and examples of the increased costs and time involved in the regulation of telephone companies. Remember that many of the companies we are seeking deregulation for are 1,000 customers or less. If it costs $1,000 to have a consultant fill out a document requested by the PUC or to file a new set of tariffs, each customer of that company pays $1 for that report. I recently asked several companies to estimate the cost of regulation and give specifics where possible. Pine Telephone Company has two exchanges over on the eastern border of Oregon with 500 access lines, estimates their cost for regulation about $9,000. Colton Telephone, which has one exchange and 800 customers, spent over $7,000 for their consultant on rate case information, PUC filings, questionnaires, and depreciation studies. The PUC Form M done by their auditors cost an additional $950 in 1986. Nehalem Telephone Company, owned by Lee Dillard, who's John's brother, is a one-exchange company with 1,600 customers. The cost to file the model tariff was $2,200. The PUC tax reform questionnaire was $750. Consultant and legal fees for other matters have ranged from $3,300 to $17,000 over the last 4 years. Helix Telephone Company, north of Pendleton, has two exchanges, 230 customers total, spent over $1,600. Eagle Telephone Company, near Baker, Oregon, is one exchange, 300 customers, estimated that it costs his customers 50 cents a month just to do the PUC Form M, which is a statistical form that we do at the end of the year. And another 50 cents because of hassles over the PUC requiring him to file the OITA model tariff. I'll go into the model tariff a little bit later. Mount Angel Telephone, one exchange company, 1,300 customers, incurred over $1,300 for their consultant to work on various PUC-related activities last year. In addition, all companies pay PUC fees, and Mount Angel incurred over $1,300 in PUC fees. This does not count the time and the effort put by the employees of the company. These are just outside actual dollar figures. State and Cooperative gave me a list of specific items, including tariff, $600, Form M, $800, meetings, $1,100, other reports, $600, and other costs for travel time, computer labor, and other expenses of about $6,500. Staten has one exchange and 4,200 customers. Total cost is about 25 cents a month, and this doesn't count PUC fees. In addition to Form M, the PUC recently decided that all telephone companies should use the OITA model tariff. This was originally designed for small companies with little or no staff to design and develop their own tariffs. They can fill in the rates and file it. About six companies use it, and others take it and modify it to suit the individual company operation. The PUC would like some uniformity and would like to reduce the time required for them to screen filings. However, for those not using the tariff, either staff or consultant has to go through their tariff and compare it to the model tariff on a page-by-page basis. And then there's a lot of back-and-forth work with the PUC until they're satisfied that this is correct. This takes a lot of time and money, especially if a consultant is hired to do the work. Rules established for House Bill 2200 also require filings, showing of reasonable cost, cost calculations, etc., that put the cost of deregulating a particular service in an amount that is more than a 500 or a 5,000 line company would receive from the deregulated service. Recently, the interim commissioner started an open meeting policy. Staff immediately notified telephone companies that they must now submit filings 45 days in advance rather than 30. A delay in activity is the opposite effect of the intent of House Bill 2200. Cascade Utilities sent me the attached letter by fax machine today. The copy is not going to be too good for you to read, but it outlines a 2.5-year effort to have the affiliated interest transaction approved by the PUC. Included with that letter is a step-by-step effort working with staff to resolve differences. Yet again, on March 27, 1986, the staff was still asking for more data, and approval was finally granted on June 26, 1986, after 2 years and 9 months of activities. I'll not review the section-by-section analysis this time unless you want me to do that, but I can answer questions at your convenience or go through that.
Actually, for the record, I would kind of like you to go through the section-by-section analysis, although you might want to wait till Rocky comes in since he's the one who asked me.
Okay, why don't I have John talk to you a little bit about his affiliated interest transaction, then we'll come back to me.
Okay.
Let's see. Mr. Chairman. I'm John Dillard, Monroe Telephone Company. We formed Monroe Area Communications in 1983 for the purpose of providing cable television within our local telephone serving area. At that time, we established what we considered to be a fair and reasonable operating agreement between the two companies. Monroe Area Communications paid Monroe Telephone Company 14% on money Monroe Telephone loaned to the cable. This was about 3 or 4% better than what the telephone company could earn in the money markets or the banks, but less than what the cable company would have to borrow on the open market. By 1985, interest rates had begun their decrease, and the point had been passed where open market interest was below 14%. Monroe Telephone was now earning less than 9% on its open market investments. In July 1985, I requested that the Oregon Public Utility Commissioner approve an interest rate between Monroe Area Communications and Monroe Telephone that would be 1% greater than what Monroe Telephone could earn through the open market, which would have in 1984 been 9.75% overall interest rate. I received a letter from the staff stating the advances should be replaced with outside financing, at that time 13%. That created a problem for me. I have a problem borrowing 13% money to pay off 14% money so that money could then earn 8.5% or less. It cost us $1,875 in attorney fees to maintain the 14% interest rate, which is about $2.50 per customer in attorney's fees for this one item. Thank you.
Thank you.
that's an indication of the differences sometimes that we have in trying to get affiliated interest, which is probably the one of the more difficult areas that we deal in. And I think it's important to recognize that there are some differences of opinion between us and staff, but a lot of times what these small companies are trying to do is to branch out, use some of their existing resources in a more efficient way, and divide some of the expenses into the unregulated area. And where we have a difficulty oftentimes is that the commission wants us to allocate maybe a much higher cost to the affiliated interest, so that they're maybe overly protective on the fact that we don't want to subsidize that unregulated subsidiary. But oftentimes you might have a trencher, for example, that sits there and is used maybe once or twice a week for something, and if you could use it in another aspect of your business, maybe a cable TV business, your costs really aren't as high as the cable TV operator that has to go out and buy equipment just to do his cable TV operation. So we're looking to try and share and get some new revenues and to get some efficiencies in the business, and we don't always agree with the PUC. However, it shouldn't take a year or 18 months or 2.5 years to accomplish this. Do you have any questions about that aspect before I go into some of the attachments?
Any questions?
Okay. Let me run through some of the attachments, and I don't think yours are quite exactly in the order, but the one that says Cascade looks like this is the letter sent to me by Brad Day, and it's pretty self-explanatory. I won't go through that, but it's a letter to me, and then it covers a letter to the PUC talking about what has happened. This is a letter that is mailed out some time ago. I just got a copy of it to include with my testimony today. And then included also after that is a month-by-month document of the action that was taken. Another item that you have in there is a list like this, and I'll be using this for some other bills that we'll be talking about too, so it's a little more inclusive than you may need today. But if you look at that, it's a list of the telephone companies in Oregon, including the two Bell companies, Malheur Home, which is out of Mountain Bell, it's an Eastern Oregon company, as well as Pacific Northwest Bell. And there are two Continentals on there, so often you hear me say I represent 31 companies. The reason there's 32 is that Continental actually does have two companies in Oregon. What this list is, if you look at what we're trying to accomplish, first of all, the yellow highlighted ones are cooperatives. The first one on the list, St. Paul, has never been regulated because Oregon law does not really allow for regulation. However, the remaining 10 that are highlighted have just been deregulated by PUC action in response to review of the statutes as they established rules for House Bill 2200. They determined at that time that the cooperatives really shouldn't have been regulated. And the reason that they were regulated is mainly Pacific Northwest Bell at one time demanded that the cooperatives have filed tariffs and be regulated before they would settle with us on long-distance revenues. And so St. Paul happened to settle with General Telephone, and there was no requirement for them to do that, so they never became regulated, and the other 10 did to satisfy a requirement by PNB. So we now have 11 of the 31 that are not regulated anyway. Of the remaining, or I should say 32, of the remaining, you'll see some with an asterisk. Even the Soton, which is the smallest one, happens to be associated with an affiliate company called Telephone Data Systems, or TDS. And TDS is a larger company around the United States, and they have a Soton, which is a Washington company, has one small exchange in Oregon, and they also have a home telephone company, number 11 on your list. So those two companies are affiliated with a larger company and are treated a little differently in the statute. Continental of the West, CP National, Malheur Home, those are large companies associated with large holding companies that are affected by the bill, but in a different way than the remaining small companies. The essence of the bills really are to deregulate for a variety of the sections in the statutes all the companies except Continental of the Northwest, Pacific Telecom, United Telephone, General Telephone, and Pacific Northwest Bell. Those with an asterisk have to petition the commission before they can be removed from those sections for regulation. The remaining would be automatic if you pass this legislation. That's a general statement, okay?
Excuse me, Maury, clear sure. up. You say those with the asterisk would have to petition that is if these bills passed?
If these bills passed, as you recall, there's two sections in the bill. The first one says companies under 15,000 and not affiliated with a holding company are deregulated. In essence, they're exempt from certain sections of the statutes. Then there's another paragraph that says if they're under 15,000 but they are affiliated with a holding company, then they must petition the PUC and get approval from the PUC. That was put in at the request of Ed Morrison a long time ago when we were first talking about this, and he gave me the example of Continental of the West, for example. It's quite far away. It's only got 400 lines. And if we're going to deregulate small companies, they just as soon have us deregulate that one. So we put it in as a petition. And also because we have a little bit of difficulty in that in Iowa, they have like 150 companies, and they deregulated virtually everything that wasn't a holding company. And there was a nice dividing line between.
Legislative Council, it may be possible, since we don't appear to have anybody opposing at this point, it may be possible to put them all into one bill. Also, we will revisit this question of the threshold. We may have some amendments on the threshold question. And then this will be on work session, assuming there's no major problem, probably be on work session 4. The next meeting, as well as other items on the agenda. But I don't want to act until we get the fourth bill, because it is part of the package.
Okay. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you for all of your work. Is there any further testimony? Can't believe it. We're done before 5. Oh. Okay, Eric, sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Eric Stashen. I'm the vice chair of the Citizens Utility Board. And just real briefly, my comments, I think we also feel rather strongly that 20% limit is extremely high and should be reduced down somewhere between 5 and 10%. I mean, we might even be willing to look at 10. You know, we'll start with 5 and YTA starts with 20 and see where we go. I think in terms of this package of bills, the only one that we would have potential problems with is 2659, which removes the complaint and investigation authority of the PUC and also the unjust discrimination statutes. And we think that, I can sympathize with the small companies and their desire to reduce their regulatory cost burdens, et cetera. I don't think that translates into taking away customers' rights to file a complaint with the PUC and the PUC's ability to investigate such complaints. And likewise, the whole issue of unjust discrimination with rates, I don't think is necessarily appropriate tied in with the need to reduce regulatory costs. So I think, that's one bill that we ought to look at, perhaps more vigorously than the others.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on the territorial classification or antitrust or any of that?
I'll let our attorneys handle it.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any further testimony? If not, subcommittee's adjourned.